CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, CliffCentral.com. It is just after 7. We are busy getting stuck into the day and getting stuck into the week. And February's just around the corner. So hopefully some improvements in our life. I don't know about this vaccine rollout, when they're planning to do it, whether they're going to do it, you know, in some kind of coordinated fashion. But never expect too much from our government, because they will,
hey, you know what I thought
about?
They
will disappoint you. Yeah.
Where is the, I didn't even take a flu shot brigade. What happened to them? But
there was 1 year I got the flu shot, but I just decided it wasn't worth it. I mean, it's like, so flu, what I don't know how bad it's ever got for you, but the worst I've ever had flu was like 2 days of feeling really shitty and man down and all the rest. I always thought to actually make the appointment, go to the doctor for the flu shot, wasn't worth it. But some people swear by it. I mean, you know, I think in this case, as long as they listen, if it spreads herd immunity, if it gets people, I can't believe we're talking about COVID again. It's just such an ongoing discussion. But if we can just get back to some kind of normal, I'll do whatever it takes on my side. I'm not afraid to get it. I think there are people who probably need it more than me. But let's see. Let's see. Your story about your friend and the married man, this has got everybody talking this morning. So this is amazing. Janet says her friend is a therapist, and she had a couple in for a therapy session. The husband had been cheating, and the husband was speaking to the therapist while my friend noticed the wife looking over her shoulder behind her out of the window. Went on a few minutes, and then all of a sudden the wife jumps up and screams, "You see? Everywhere there's sex. Everyone is just fucking everyone. I'm out of here!" And storms out. And they looked out of the window, and there were two cats going at it on a wall outside.
And it just that person is just traumatized.
It triggered this woman so badly.
Shame.
Yeah.
Oh, shame.
Listen, if cheating's going to happen, it's going to happen. There's, phones or not, cheating has been a part of human life for thousands of years, you know? And these days with communication devices, I suppose the point is that you could also, even if you have the password to someone's phone, they could have a separate account. You know, they could have a different social media account to the one that's on their phone that you don't know about.
Different phone.
Yeah, different phone, exactly. I mean, I know one of my friends has two phones.
That was also...
I'm always very suspicious of people who have two phones.
Yeah, I remember where I was living, we had an attic. It wasn't like an attic, it was like a landing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the morning, I'd get up to go and get some water from the kitchen or whatever. And I could hear the phone upstairs beeping or buzzing with messages.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know it existed. I waited for the person to go to work, and then I went upstairs and found the phone. But again, it makes me think, if cheating is so common and so natural, then should we not adjust our mindsets? And, you know, is monogamy the way to go? I don't know.
There are people, luckily, who get it right. There are people who trust each other, and most of the time have good reason to trust each other, and they've managed to pull it off and do it the right way, that marriage thing. And I have infinite respect for those people. Well done to them. Not everybody's going to get it right. Not everybody's going to be able to do it as well as they do. But if you can, take my hat off to you. Well done.
Yeah, but I think that would regardless have to be a conversation that the couple has. It's not like when it's been revealed that you've been cheating, you go, actually, so monogamy has never been for me. No, you can't just bring that up all of a Saturday.
It's not an excuse, yeah.
But then, yeah, there's some people who just swear by secrets are actually a good thing. I had a sister who was in a long-term relationship and was getting very serious, where they had moved in together. They were really setting things up for the future. And she still kept a just-in-case bank account that was not their joint bank account, that her man didn't know of at this stage. It was if shit were to hit the fan, I can still use this money to bounce back, to move out, to, you know, set myself up separately away from him. You know, so people like that who think, yeah, I can love you, I can be in this relationship and be committed, but I also need to have my own little secrets.
That's very clever.
It's very almost wise. It's that almost sounds like a little emergency box that you keep. You know, you kind of have. I was, again, this is going to make me sound like such a paranoid nutcase because I watched that movie, I Am Legend, last night. Now you're going to think I really believe this stuff. But I always have like a kit, like if I were in trouble. And it usually stays in the car with like a change of clothes and a burner phone and like some money and all of that shit, just in case, you know, something terrible happened and I needed to make a run for it for whatever reason. Maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like if like if the whole world was falling apart around us, I'm not a prepper, but I do think that I have the means to stay alive for a couple of weeks without needing anyone else and to be able to figure out how to make my next step. And I think most people in a relationship need to have, you know, if you've been married to a guy for a long, long time as a woman and you depend on him financially completely, which is the case for many women in the world. And then one day you find a reason to leave him because he's, you know, devastated you or broken your trust completely, or he has done something stupid, whatever it might be. You don't have any recourse to any finances. I think you've always got to have a little emergency account somewhere. Not just a woman if you're, you know, married to a guy or whatever. But I think everybody has to have their own little, you know, hidey hole that they keep some stuff in, that they would be able to, that you don't tell anybody about, that is just there in case you need it. You might never need it. You might get to, 80 years old and go, okay, it's time to just cash this in. This is pointless because whatever happens here happens. But I think it's a good idea to just keep, you know, a couple of thousand rand maybe. Maybe a, you know, couple of...
A Colombian passport.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know that you need to be like James Bond. I don't think you need to, you know, take it to the nth degree. But I do think it would be useful sometimes to have all of this stuff in preparation of the worst, but expecting the best. I mean, MM says he's got two phones because he bought a new phone and his old phone still works, so he keeps them both. All right, that's your excuse if that's what you're saying. I don't see the need. Deepa says, morning, I took the flu shot once and caught the flu. I've never taken it since and fortunately haven't had the flu since. Annika says, if I take the flu shot, it's because there's going to be a universal flu vaccine, which there isn't. And Dogos is also saying, I'm here. I don't take the flu shot. Look, yeah, again, that's up to you. Did you see they raided a doctor for ivermectin in South Africa? They want us to have no hope. I've got a friend who got some ivermectin. And apparently he didn't. I mean, it's 300 and something rand a tablet, but he got some. So I don't understand, if something like that works, why don't we just try it? Why don't we make it available? There's so much controversy.
So apparently there are moves to look at making it available.
It just seems so stupid that you'd be raiding doctors and trying to arrest people for a drug that might even work. There's something very dodgy about that. You know, this plays right into the conspiracy theories. And I see... Cyril is putting out messages this morning. I think this is on Twitter, saying we all need to work together to build confidence in the vaccine, to demonstrate its effectiveness and safety, and to emphasize its vital importance in overcoming this deadly disease. So there's Cyril saying that this morning. And now, if that's true, why are you worried about like whether ivermectin could work or not? Why does it have to be your vaccine? And also, people can treat themselves. I mean, I'll famously remember Manta Shabalalam Simang saying we must eat beetroot and cabbage and, you know, red onions and garlic if we want to be able to avoid HIV/AIDS. No one in those days called her fake news and had her arrested publicly and sent to jail for what she'd said. And she was the Minister of Health, for God's sake. You remember?
Wow.
Just compare that to what we're getting now.
Or like when Jacob Zuma said he would have a shower after sex so that he didn't get AIDS.
Right. Exactly. So John sent me that message about the doctor they raided for ivermectin. I think that's crazy. Temba says, was the hippo in Four Ways really slaughtered? Does anyone know about that hippo in Four Ways?
I saw that. I mean, I knew about the hippo in Four Ways.
No?
But I didn't know if it had been slaughtered. I mean, that's just crazy.
Slaughtered. I mean, maybe, you know, so put down. It is dangerous to have a hippo running around in a residential area.
I'm seeing a story saying that these are Twitter rumors about the Four Ways hippo being captured and eaten.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
I don't know that hippo is the kind of thing you'd want to eat.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound to me like a fun, you know, one of the world's best meats. But then, again, I don't know. I've never eaten hippo. So.
Okay, so there's a photograph of what clearly is a hippo. Ugh, it's been sliced open.
Oh, God.
And someone, Sir Daniel, at Danny_gift, says, I can't believe my people slaughtered the hippo. What the F, Basil, why me? It was trending because this picture went wild. And it does depict a group of men cutting the meat of a dead hippo. And many were convinced they had ample proof that showed the escaped four-ways creature had been slaughtered.
My God. But
apparently it is fake news.
All right.
Thanks,
Leanne. Thank God. You know, I'm glad that we've got you on staff to instantly give us answers to these things. It takes a bit of research to figure out whether something's fake news or not. You're good at that stuff.
Very hard work.
The picture of the hippo being used for meat has been traced to an incident in Kenya and not South Africa,
okay,
where locals had killed a hippo after it mauled one of the locals in the area.
Mm. I don't know. Anybody you know that has eaten hippo? And I wonder what that would taste like. I don't think it would be very nice. I'm not going to stand.
I assume it will be very tough.
I'm not getting into the queue for hippo meat is what I'm saying. Even in a pinch. You know, even in a situation where it's really, really difficult to find food, I'm not lining up for hippo. I'm sorry. All right. A couple of things that we need to talk about this morning. And Leanne's got some stuff on her agenda, too. So let's go to some of those. Apparently, an entire herd of elephants. Now, this is such a great story. And I actually watched the video that you sent last night, Leanne. It's all over. While we're talking about hippos, we may as well talk about elephants. This elephant gave birth. And you see the birth taking place, and this group of tourists are watching. And what happens afterwards is so amazing. It just shows you again how incredibly complex animal family behavior is and how little we actually appreciate about the animals. We think we're the only sentient beings and that we are the only creatures that understand those relationships. Well, clearly not, and these elephants demonstrate that. Do you want to explain what happens after the baby is has come out and, you know, it's lying there on the ground and the mother starts trumpeting and then what happens? Because that's what's amazing about the story.
Yeah, it was really amazing. So this poor little guy pops out and falls to the ground and he's tearing his way through the amniotic sac, still lying around and trying to get up. And while he's doing that, the mom starts trumpeting. What is it called?
Yeah, calling. She's kind of, you know how elephants sound.
What did they, isn't there a word for it?
I think it's trumpeting. I mean, that's what I.
Sounds no. Right.
Yeah. And you actually hear the game ranger explaining that they're celebrating.
Yeah.
And all of the elephants around in the area, they've given her space, so you don't see any of them in the shot.
Mm.
And then as soon as the baby's born, they all crowd around her and do what seems to be like a celebratory trumpeting where they're all kind of welcoming the baby. I mean, the poor baby must be scared out of its mind. Can you imagine being surrounded by a herd of elephants and that extreme noise?
But it is amazing.
They
explain in the article that it's partly because they're actually celebrating the birth of a new elephant, which is amazing. I mean, you know, that's kind of what humans would do. We'd all celebrate and send cards and send flowers to the mom and, you know, come and visit in that first week to, you know, come and be a part of this new addition to the family. And that's what humans do. And then the second reason that they make those noises is to just remind everybody around there that they are protecting the baby and stay away.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And there were so many of them as well, and then all just banding together. And eventually you couldn't see the mom and baby anymore because they were all standing around her protecting the baby.
That's
just so amazing to see. So amazing. And again, the ranger said he'd never seen an elephant being born in the wild like that.
Amazing.
And, you know, it's quite rare.
Yeah, it is
very
special.
Cool.
Annika says, I know somebody who just came from Zim. He walked right through the fence, thanks to knowing a policeman. He told us that you pay 300 Rand and they test you just by scanning your temperature. To get into Zim, you only need your passport and permit. To come back, you need to have those and the COVID test. But apparently it's just a temperature scan. So obviously, if you're willing to pay a policeman $300, they don't do a proper test on you. And you can come across the border into South Africa from Zim. Are you surprised?
No.
Well, I'm not so sure I believe it 100% because, as mentioned, my domestic worker who is Zimbabwean is still stuck in Zim. She's been there since December. Still can't get back.
Has she paid the 300 Rand? Because seemingly that would get it done.
I'm thinking about it and I don't think she has the money. She hasn't been able to work. There's no way of working in Zimbabwe. And
yeah.
I mean, that's why she's here. So no, I don't think so.
Yikes.
Woody says, when a baby is born, we all go with vuvuzelas to the ward and blow hard.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some people who are giving birth under these COVID regulations and actually glad that there isn't a rush of family around and you have your own space and time to do things.
Yeah. That was Taryn, my doctor cousin. She had a baby during COVID. But just like a proud elephant mom, you want everyone to be able to see the baby. So it's quite tragic, actually, that, you know, people haven't been part of every moment of his life growing up. And, you know, we missed his first Christmas and things like that. It's quite sad.
I can't believe my nephew turned 7 on Saturday.
Jeez.
You know, he was born the year that we started Cliff Central. He was born in January. Obviously, we started Cliff Central in May. And it's 7 years.
But you have another nephew that's older, don't you?
No, younger. Younger. He's the elder one.
Because now I remember you becoming an uncle when we were still at 5FM.
Yeah, but we were still at this stage, remember. It was only in March that we went off
air. Of course.
So, yeah.
That's okay. As you were, nothing to see here.
So it just doesn't feel like 7 years ago. That's the point. It feels like it's all gone really, really quickly. It's a long time. 7 years is ages, man. I mean, I've seen this little guy grow up, and he's developing into a real personality. And like he's got – it's incredible. You know, when babies are born – and I suppose the elephant story is what got us onto this. But when babies are born, they're just a blob, and it takes a lot of attention and it screams a lot and it makes a mess and all of that stuff. But over a period of 7 years, somehow miraculously, and this is really something incredible, they become a real little person. It's just unbelievable. So he's 7 now. That's cool.
That's when I get mushy as an uncle, when you think about, oh my God, like these are people, these are humans, and where you don't need my help anymore. I remember once just, this is so silly, but I guess as well, this is maybe perhaps what some parents go through. I remember being at home for the holidays and my niece didn't need anyone, and specifically me, to help her run her bath water, because that was always a thing. It was like, okay, it's time for your bath, and I'd help her, and you get the perfect hot to cold ratio. And she's like, okay, I'm going to bath. I'm like, do you not need me? She goes, no, I don't. You don't need me to run your bath water.
Yeah.
It's silly.
No, we had a little, just the family got together on Saturday afternoon, and we had some cake and kind of just went there for tea and all the rest of it. It was really cute to see, and he got a guitar, so now he might want to learn to play the guitar, which would be amazing. I just hope he has the patience to. I never had the patience. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to tell, right? Kids mostly are into music, but you can't really tell whether they've got any abilities. That'll come much later. And you know, I remember the story of Brian May from Queen. He inherited some shitty guitar from someone in the family. It was like a hand-me-down. And then he never really cared about it. And he went for guitar lessons, and the guy who was giving him the lessons was so in love with music that he inspired him. And then as a result of that, he took up playing the guitar seriously and became arguably one of the greatest guitarists in the world, or Brian May. So you never know. I'm holding thumbs that he, let's hope he makes gazillions out of it, and then we can all live off of him.
That's such a parent thing, though. Yeah. Like, you give your kid golf clubs, little like kid golf clubs, and you think, oh, he's going to be, you know, the next big star in golf.
Meanwhile, he's average as hell.
Turns out to be sitting on your couch at 21, not finding a job.
And then it's also sad and frustrating when they just drop that, like zero interest in it. Like, nah, okay. Thanks, yeah. I'm over it. Yeah, my sister had one of those moments when my niece was so over ballet. And I think it was just the vision she had in her mind. I'm going to have a daughter. She'll go into ballet. I'll be a ballerina mom. Just, my niece was not for that at all.
Someone posted a picture over the weekend on social media of Elon Musk having his 18th birthday. Have you seen those pictures?
No.
Oh my God. Uh-uh. It's like the, it's just the most awkward, like, there he is. Elon Musk at 18. Just look up Elon Musk at 18 and you'll see what we're talking about. It's hilarious.
And you can see he's in South Africa.
I think he was. Yeah, I think he might have been in America already. All right, John Birks is here. Hello, Birksy. How are you?
Steve. I'm doing pretty good. How are you? Long time no see, long time no hear, but you're looking good.
Thank you, sir. It's great to have your voice.
You're probably feeling on top of it all.
No, I'm all right. I'm glad to hear that you've managed to stay clear of COVID, and I hope you're keeping healthy.
Sorry, repeat that, Darren.
I'm glad that you are keeping safe and that you're healthy and you haven't got the COVID. I mean, that's going around, right?
Well, I mean, we're all sitting here with masks and whatever and silent prayers. The world's upside down. I don't know whether it's going to turn it around, but right now it's kind of dizzy.
Well, John,
the world is dizzy. That's what I mean.
That is exactly right. And John Birks, it's always good to talk to you. I mean, you really are, in my mind and for many people in this country, you're one of the greatest broadcasters that we've ever had. And you continue to hold that position no matter who the hell comes after you. You were there at the start. You were the biggest celebrity in South Africa for a whole long time. Many people grew up listening to you. And I remember a couple of times, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today, in fact the reason, is that Larry King died over the weekend, and he was a real icon of the broadcasting world. And somebody sent me an email over the weekend and said you really should get John Birks to pay tribute to Larry King. And I thought, what a good idea, because you spoke to him a couple of times. You met Larry King, you interviewed him on your show, and you would probably know him a whole lot better than many of us, even if we'd seen him on TV a lot. So, you know, let's pay tribute to a great broadcaster, Larry King. And I can't think of a better way of doing that than having John Birks tell us his recollections of the man.
Well, I mean, Larry King was, pardon the pun, but Larry King was the king of radio. He was a very fascinating guy, and I spoke with him not too long ago, and he retained everything he always was. He was a man with no problem with the spoken word. He was an inquiring man. He wanted to know more about you than you, chances are, would wanted to know about him, because he was just the kind of guy who tried to understand exactly who you were, the guest, that is. He had this powerful voice. He was warm. He was kind. He was good. He told it like it is. Some people liked it, and others, obviously, you can't win them all. But he did. He was the king of the airwaves. He was the man that got involved with talk radio. He was the man that got involved with all forms of radio. Communication was the name of the game. But at the same time, he was powerful. People sat up and took note of what he had to say, because he didn't just say it. he knew what it was all about before he even said it, because he had this inquisitive, highly inquisitive way of establishing exactly who you as the guest was and what you had and what you did in terms of any contribution at that time.
Tell me about the...
He was one of a wonder. He was a wonder kid. He was the king.
Tell me about the time that you interviewed him and how you managed to get that to happen, because he was this huge, big celebrity, and I think very few people. And you had him in studio. You didn't just call him up.
No, I had him in the studio.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Exactly, yeah, in the studio. He was radio.
Yep.
Larry King was radio, you know. He was the man that really got radio stations to do news, to do talk, to do more than just being on the radio. He was special, very special, in so many different ways. The spoken word was something very near and dear to him. I think he went to bed at night and spoke about certain things in his sleep. He never stopped talking. He never stopped wanting to know more and more and more.
Was it difficult to interview someone like that, because he would always make it about the guest? And even if you were interviewing him and he was the guest, he'd try to make it about you.
Yeah, that's perfectly correct, yeah. He wanted to know about me too, and said, "Well, I think you can ask me more about myself now."
Yeah,
he was an inquiring man,
and that
very much an inquiring man.
That trademark, he used to wear the braces, and he used to have that microphone on his desk, even though it was purely for show, but it was because of his radio past and everything that he'd done in radio. What do you think it is, aside from what you've already said about that inquisitive, inquiring mind and the curiosity about other people, what do you think it is that makes a really great broadcaster, John?
Well, I think as, pardon me, as I recall, pardon me, as I recall, a young Gareth Cliff knocking on my door and saying, "I want to be on radio." And I used a word called passion. That's very important. Larry King was passionate about radio, but so are you. And you displayed that passion. You displayed that wanting to know, that the interest of it all. I recall with absolute clarity the day you knocked on Rena Broomberg's door, who was the kind of GM of the then 702 of the golden years, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
Please do not take offense to the fact that perhaps it's no longer the golden years. Call it whatever you like.
Yeah.
But the point is that You showed a degree of interest in terms of the spoken word again, the importance of the spoken word, the importance of being passionate about it. Passion's the name of the game, you know. And Larry King was passionate about radio from a way back when.
He really was.
And Larry King was the guy that introduced so many news services and added that to the formats of different music radio stations.
John, you
introducing
know,
the introduction of news, of talk. He was Mr. Talk. He was the king.
We got a message now from Temba, who says he wishes that broadcasters like you and Larry King were around, because he says that's what's missing in radio today. And he feels that there was a golden era very much. And he says all we have today are celebrities and people with a social media following. Do you think radio has changed a lot? And do you think we've lost some of the magic? Because I do feel that radio has slipped down the ranking of what's important in people's lives. When you were on the mornings on 702 all those years ago, I think that that was such a part of people's lives, and so many people depended on it every morning to start their day. And I don't know that that is what people do anymore. Now, you know, most people are on their phones. They're on social media. They're not dependent on radio, and radio isn't there for them like it used to be. Do you think we've missed a golden age? It's gone. It's behind us now.
Well, you're asking pardon me. You're asking me, and I think about it pretty often. I really do. I refer to it as the golden years of radio. But why the golden years? Because radio somehow was interesting, and there were interesting people on radio at the time, and I'm sure there still are interesting people on radio. However, if I may say, it has changed. And when you think about all the things we could be talking about on radio with regards South Africa, regards the change, regards are you satisfied with what the president has to say?
Yeah.
How do we get it back where it belongs? How do we get it back on its feet again? How do we just do the things that people would say, whew, quiet, listen to this.
Yeah.
This is interesting. As we talk right now, I'm not sure, for example, when we will get the vaccine. There are tiny little spots in Africa, Muga, Hoga, Higa, Hoga, and all these tiny little towns that have got and understand that soon they'll be getting, or whatever the date may be, and they've been given the date, the vaccine.
Yeah.
Do you know when you'll get the vaccine?
Not
Do you know when you'll feel, aha, I can fight this germ? You know, it's not like going to war and the commanding officer says, load and load your engine, load your firearms. And the guy's looking, he can't find his firearms. If you cannot see the enemy, you're in a whole lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. And radio would have played.
I think at this time, it's like you're going to war and there are people dropping dead next to you.
Yeah.
And you cannot understand why, because you can't see them. It's the unknown enemy. Oh, you know it's a disease. You know it's this, that, and the other. But you can't see him.
Your phone's going. Do you think it's something important? Do you want to answer?
So, repeat?
Do you want to answer the phone? Because I hear it going in the background there.
I don't know, talking about the golden years of radio. What do I do? I got so many little instruments around you. I don't know what the heck to press.
Well, John, listen.
Tell me what to do and I'll press it.
Hello,
what's your name? No answer. Press the wrong button. You can't win sometimes. You can never win them all, you know. For me to be surrounded by all this instrumentation and this and press that, don't press, hold that, hold this. No, not me. You should know me by now.
Listen, John, thank you so much for your kind words about Larry King. He really was a great bit, but in so many ways, there are still many greats among us, and it's always the most incredible privilege to have your voice as part of the show, because as I've said a million times, there are people who grew up with you who feel like you're part of their lives, and that's never going to change, golden years over or not. And it's so great to have your words about Larry King for us to just think about as we mourn his passing. And I hope you have a great week this week.
And it's so good to hear you on radio and to see you too on television.
Thank you.
For example, is this going out on TV? Is this what do they call it? Simulcasting? Is it on both radio, word, and television? I always refer to it as the important parts of the anatomy, the ear and the eye. Of what you see and what you hear, that's important. And what you tell them.
Yeah, well.
Because they can switch it off too, you know.
I know, yeah. And they will. And that's what I fear for every single day, that I'm going to become boring and they're going to switch it off. I suppose everybody has that fear. John, thank you so much. Great to speak to you.
It was great to be with you and nice to see you again being successful. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you so much. There's John Birks, Birksy. What a guy. What a boikey. isn't that voice just something else?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We went everywhere there.
Yeah.
I remember
speaking of legends, yeah.
Yeah, I remember Larry King going in to be interviewed by Birks, and I always thought, you know what, you've got the great TV interviewer and this great American radio guy, and then, you know, John was just, and the two of them got on like a house on fire. They just loved each other. They had so much fun. He was meant to be there for about 40 minutes. He ended up spending probably an hour and a half with him. Wow. So I think that's really cool. And to have had that experience, to have had the great interviewer in the studio and for Birks to have interviewed him is really quite something. But what a guy. And yeah. I do think he makes a very valid point about the golden era of radio. I think things have changed so much that in some ways we don't need it as much as we did before. But it's just morphed into something else. And it's not just technology. It's the whole, you know, consumer. You've got to have instant gratification stuff. I mean, look at TV, for example. If you want to watch a series now, you want the whole goddamn series and you want to binge it immediately. You don't have to wait till
there's no ads.
You don't have to wait till the next week for it. I'm just very concerned that we're losing our ability to be patient about things too. And, you know, if you wanted to hear the news, you had to wait until, I think they did one news bulletin at like 7 o'clock, didn't they? Now there's rolling news all day. And I don't know if it's all good for us. Maybe we'll discover in time. Maybe there's a point somewhere in the future where people look back and watching the news the whole time is very bad for you.
It was in our very lifetimes. If you think about being at primary school or even high school in the 90s, and we didn't actually know much about what was going on while we were at school. We only found out when we got home and watched the news later.
Yeah,
wow. You know,
but also, I mean, school kids. So
the world could be falling apart. They could have bombed Israel, and we would not know until 7 or 8 o'clock.
I watched this incredible show. I didn't know there was even a channel called the Curiosity Channel.
And yes, I love it.
I always say hi, don't watch TV. Well, on Saturday, somewhere around midday, I was watching TV and I was flipping through the channels because I was bored and. You know, I didn't have a lot to do this weekend, which was quite nice. It was relaxing. But I was watching this channel, Curiosity Channel, which is really good. I didn't know it existed. So that's going to be one that I'll watch again. And they had this show called The 101 Biggest Events of the 20th Century, something like that. 101 events that changed the world in the 20th century, something in the line of that. And it was just so brilliant because they had – about a five, not even 5 minutes, maybe 3 to 4 minutes on each of these 101 events. And they did them in batches of 10 at a time. So you could watch, you know, the Vietnam War and then the marriage of Princess Di and Prince Charles and then the Jonestown Massacre. And then, you know, the Japanese, the bombs being dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they'd cover each of these 101 events, and it was brilliantly done with footage from all of the things. You know, Chernobyl and what that did to the world. And there were cultural things, like one of the events was the miniskirt, and Mary Quant, who invented the miniskirt in London in the 1960s. And
just, of course, her surname's Quant.
And her surname was Quant, and just these amazing, amazing stories. It was so good. I just absolutely loved it and found myself kind of waiting. And luckily for me, because I'm impatient, that one episode followed another. So it did 10, 10, 10, 10. But I missed a few of them, so I'll have to catch up. But what an awesome show, just going back in history and kind of looking at all these things. And there were a few of them that I didn't even know about. I had no idea about.
What?
Yeah. Caught me completely off guard. And I didn't feel like an idiot. I felt like I was learning, which was good. But what a great show. I think that kind of thing should be almost like forced viewing for kids because you say when we were at school, we only watched the news when we got home and we didn't really know what was going on. But I think if kids watched that show and you did it over a period of a week, if you're a parent who's going to home educate your kids for the next while because schools aren't open, then maybe you should make them watch that. and they might just learn something really interesting. It might spark an interest in, you know, science or technology or history or fashion or whatever it might be, because it's a really, really diverse list of 101 events that changed the world. They're not all about, you know, politics and history and war and all that kind of thing. A lot of them are, like I said, the miniskirt or, you know, Watergate, things like that, that could be very, very different, that have affected the world culturally in a different way. It's just really interesting. What a great show. Thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, you guys got me thinking about something, because just in comparison to what Leanne said earlier, I remember the first time I started getting a feel of, oh, we are in an information age, was the day Michael Jackson hung his child over the balcony.
Blanket.
And footage of that was just everywhere. We, like, for the large part of the morning at school, were talking about it. Like, teachers were coming in to different classrooms, chatting to other teachers. We were, like, eavesdropping. Like, what is this? Who was this man? And what did he do?
I just went. That has to be.
We love you. It was in Berlin, wasn't it, that he hung the kid over the balcony?
Yeah, I know he was.
To his adoring fans.
Yeah. And he almost lost grip of the child. Remember, it almost fell.
Yes. he almost dropped the blanket.
Here's my little
son. You should have seen
them. Here's my little blanket. And you can say hello to the crowds below. Hi, everybody. I'm sorry, but celebrities have very weird names for their kids. But to me, that's the one.
That's the worst
blanket
one.
Takes the cherry.
Yeah.
But it isn't. Is that his real name?
It's a nickname that has now sort of stuck, because now
what does Blanket look like now?
Oof.
a lot fluffier.
He has this long hair, and he looks a little geeky and nerdy. And I hate to say this, but he is into, like, gaming and stuff. He even has a YouTube channel that he updates every now and then.
Oh. My God, you've got to look up Blanket Jackson.
Now, as someone who's over 18, he goes by the nickname BG as opposed to Blanket.
Blanket Jackson. Please take a look. Just do yourself a favor. Google Blanket Jackson and see what's like. These pictures of him come up. And
I don't laugh at the poor kid, man.
I'm sorry. He looks ridiculous. He looks like a migrant laborer from Panama.
But listen, he's the only one of Michael Jackson's kids who actually looks like Michael Jackson.
He does look a bit like
him. Some way.
Yeah. But he's.
And he hasn't had the easiest couple of years, because there was, I think last year or the year before, no, it was easily 2 years ago, there was a story that came out, which I can properly believe. They were saying that for the past few years before that, Blanket has been living alone in a house in California.
Yeah.
Like Prince Michael I, that's his elder brother.
By the way, he looks ridiculous too. He looks like a...
They all look a little...
A very strange family. I mean, she's quite pretty, Paris, the daughter.
Paris,
She's very pretty, but the two sons are such... They just look like such ordinary, ordinary, ordinary people.
But also, so I mean, would you want your daughter dating that?
No. He's Prince Michael Joseph Jackson Jr. And he looks, he's got a little goatee beard. He looks like a normal white kid from like suburban America.
Not even like he's swirly with a little black something.
He's got nothing interesting going on. He's like the most boring looking person. And then at least Blanket's got like the long hair and like the Michael Jackson eyebrows and stuff. But Prince is just the most boring looking kid. And then they've got this hot sister who I don't know where she comes from, but she's been like fashion modeling and she's done a bit of singing. And so she's clearly inherited the celebrity genes. But these two boys are so boring. Like if you walk past them in the street, you wouldn't go, those are Michael Jackson's kids.
Prince threw himself into charity work. I think he still heads up the Heal the World Foundation on behalf of his father.
Okay.
Then Paris does modeling and singing every now and then. And so they're busy doing their own things. And blanket was left in the house all alone. Like, he would have au pairs come to the house. He'd have food just delivered. You know, Catherine, their grandmother's old, and she's still, you know, she's she has her own life to live.
Doesn't
so
she...
blanket was left.
Jesus, what a strange situation.
That's why he now goes, I think, uploads things onto YouTube.
I think all of us may be the first people to look up Blanket Jackson in a couple of years. I don't think anybody's looked him up for years.
But funnily enough, I typed in Blanket, and Blanket Jackson was the second recommendation on the list.
Oh, no.
The first was Blanket.
Oh, man. Just before we go, I remember Larry King. He used to do those interviews. I will never forget the two things I always associate with him. The first one was, remember that JonBenet Ramsey girl? There was this story in America that was the biggest story for a while. She just went missing. She was this little, like a child beauty pageant winner. JonBenet Ramsey or John Bennett
the
Ramsey.
90s, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was a big thing. Larry King could not let this story go. He was interviewing everyone, the woman who... for JonBenet Ramsey's parents was like on the show. He interviewed every person you could connect to that story. I still don't know what the story was or whether they ended up finding out what happened to her or anything else, but every goddamn time I tuned into the Larry King show, he would be doing something around this JonBenet Ramsey thing. And it was his obsession for a while. I don't know whether it was considered good for ratings or whatever. And the other thing was the way that he would take calls, both on radio and on TV. He'd be like, okay, this is the Larry King show. I'm Larry King. Good morning, everybody. We're going to go straight to Washington. Well, Washington. Hello, you're on.
Hi, Larry. I just want to say that I really enjoy your show.
Yes, yes. Let's move on. What is it you want to ask?
I just would like to ask Alec Baldwin. I would like to ask if he really enjoys having sex with his wife, Kim Basinger.
Yes, that's a good question. And he'd lean on the desk. He'd go, what do you think, huh? Are you enjoying having sex with Kim Basinger, Alec Baldwin? And he'd go, oh, well, Larry, you know, I don't want to say too much about that. And he'd go, okay, next caller. Let's go to Denise in Florida.
Hi, Larry.
Oh, my God, it was funny. Because he would just cut people off. And then the best thing I ever saw on the Larry King show, and I still maintain this is the coolest thing I've ever seen, full stop. I think it was Clint Eastwood. Was it him? It could have been someone else. I'm like really muddled about my recollections around this because it just seemed like the coolest thing ever. So Clint Eastwood is on the show and Larry says to him, so Clint, do you think you're cool? At one point in the interview, because he's asked him all the boring questions about his, you know, movies or, he says, do you think you're cool? So Clint Eastwood takes a cigarette out of his pocket. And he bounces it on the desk into his mouth and lights it in one fell swoop. Like it's just perfect. It's almost as if it's like it's been choreographed. But you can see because it's Larry King live. It's live. It's a live show. And you knew it was live because there were often, you know, mistakes with callers or things went technologically wrong. And this moment was just so perfect because he bounced the cigarette on the table into his mouth and lit it and went, I don't know, Larry. Do you think I'm cool? I was like, Jesus. I was like, wow.
Gold.
That is just the most perfectly timed thing you could ever wish for. I think it was Clint. It had to have been Clint Eastwood. It sounds like something he would do. But I just thought, Jesus, that's just golden. You get that moment with somebody. Yeah. Oh, man. And there wasn't a day where Larry didn't have some woman crying because she, you know, she'd bawled her eyes out because she finally opened up to Larry King. And he interviewed the Pope, famously. He interviewed Princess Diana. He interviewed pretty much everybody that was anybody at the time. I think Larry King, if you had to sit to dinner with him at any given time up to the day he died, he would have stories that would blow your mind. And there's something about that I'm super jealous of. Not because I haven't interviewed interesting people, but because that's something I really prize above all other things. I love someone who can make great conversation because they've got a list of stories. Every interaction, like, you know, you could say, oh, well, I once met, Maradona or whatever. And you could have met Maradona, but you didn't spend an hour in his presence talking to him. So you might have got a photo with, you know, Lady Gaga, for example. You got a photo with her. Great. But if you were Larry King, chances are you sat with Madonna for like an hour and a half and you spoke to her. And there was the before and after the interview, the stuff that we all didn't get to see, where she was being herself and she was saying, oh, Larry, let's not talk about this. Can we talk about that? Those are the kinds of stories that I think he had. Just tons of stories. That makes a great life. I do think when you do go, and Larry went 8 marriages in his late 80s, you know, he used to do sports announcing. He was just a really incredible guy. Larry Zeiger, that was his real name. Larry Zeiger. And he must have had stories, man. I'm a little bit jealous of that. That's the stuff I want. One day when I die, I want to have all those stories. Because when you do go through it, and on his deathbed, he must have had those flashbacks to what an incredible life he had and the people he met and the places he'd been and the things he discovered. And that must be so fulfilling. It must be so much better than dying with, you know, money or with power or with any of that stuff, just to have those stories. Sharon Stone, Tracy's just reminded me, when she was on Larry King Live. And remember, Sharon Stone at that stage was like the sexiest woman in the world because she'd done that beaver shot from Basic Instinct. And that was that was like the sexiest thing that was happening.
She's still amazing.
Yeah, she is. She's incredible. But she was the sexiest woman in the world. And she like leaned forward on the Larry King show. I remember this too. And she pulled his suspenders and snapped them back onto him, and he was like, oh my God, Sharon Stone, you're so sexy, you've given me a boner. Let's go to Detroit. Here's Sally from Detroit.
Oh my God, Larry, that was so hot, the way that Sharon Stone pulled your suspenders forward and just snapped them back and they hit your titties, and I could hear the vibrations from my side. Oh my God, Larry, I'm so excited for you, I just can't believe that you did that. Oh, Larry, I'm such a fan, Larry.
All right, that's enough from you. Thank you, Denise.
And there was also this cool fact about the phone calls, because they started accepting calls from around the world as well.
Oh, yeah. You could call in. Mm. Don't believe I didn't try.
Did you?
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. I'd be on Larry King. Of course not. Of course I would have tried.
Wow.
I didn't sit there every day trying, but I did it once or twice. I didn't get through, obviously. But there we go.
Oh, damn.
Mm-hmm. There are so many amazing scenes from Larry, and now thank God for the internet, because you can actually go back and look at it on YouTube. Bulelo's just reminded me of one where Seinfeld was on, and he got triggered by him on air.
Moment.
Do you remember that? You tell the story. This is hilarious. You go ahead.
So Larry had this thing of doing minimal preparations for his interviews, because he used to say, you know, he wanted to be in the moment and he wanted to ask questions out of curiosity.
Yeah.
But he had Jerry Seinfeld on just after he had ended the Seinfeld show. Now, for a lot of people, they know that Jerry ended the show himself because the show had reached such huge levels of success. He didn't want it to dip and ever feel like, ugh, I've stayed a little too long doing the show than I should have. Larry didn't know that. So Larry just very coyly in the interview asked, why did you end the show? Yeah. Were you canceled? And Jerry was so beside himself. Like, Larry, are you stupid? I was like the highest rated show for X number of years. I have this many viewers. Like, why would I be canceled? Are you stupid? He was so offended.
He was actually quite...
So awkward.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It is hilarious. And then now, you know, Larry had the CNN show, and then he stayed off for a while, and then he came back with this recent iteration that was called Larry King Now. One of my favorite moments from that show was when he was interviewing, I don't even know this guy, and I know, you know, I keep up with pop culture, but his name is Danny Pudi, P-U-D-I, and he's an actor. He stars in DuckTales, the new DuckTales that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Larry asks this guy, so what is a luxury you can't live without? And this guy, you know, a little nerdish as well, still starting out as an actor, he says, I like coffee. Larry goes, coffee, that's a luxury. Then he goes, well, okay, I also like socks as well. I really do enjoy a good pair of socks. Larry, almost in disgust, goes, socks and coffee, that's your luxury. A luxury is a private plane. And this Danny guy goes, Larry, I'm in DuckTales. How can I afford a plane?
Get out of here. Okay, let's go. So, let's go to Stephen in Chicago. Stephen, hello.
Hi, Larry. I've been watching your show for a very long time, and I just wanted to know, are you really a lizard, and are you 500 years old?
Look, you just shut up, you bastard. Put the phone down on him, and let's get on with the show. There it is.
Oh, man.
What a great guy. I'm sorry he's dead. But you know what? None of us last forever, and sometime in the future, it's going to be your turn. So enjoy what you got in the meantime, and make sure you make the most of today. You've got a whole Monday ahead of you. Let's have a great week this week. We will be back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Thank you to John Burks for joining us today to tell us about Larry King. And we will see you tomorrow. Be good. Ciao, everybody.
Bye.
CliffCentral.com.